Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
What's your secret?
So in college, my brother and I were gonna build my computer because like we're super computer nerds. And so we ordered all the parts online and it was about like $1,000 in parts and we were gonna build it together. And we get the parts in the mail and we're like, yay. And then 2 days later, another box of the same parts shows up. And being computer nerds, you're like, well, now I can make a supercomputer, but only if they don't ask for this back. So we waited for like a good couple of weeks to see if they would say anything, like they would send us an email or call us. Nothing ever happened, so we made a supercomputer out of the parts, and it was awesome.
Did you calculate pi with the supercomputer?
We did not, but there was a lot of other things that were awesome about the computer, you know.
Yeah, you can surf porn really fast.
No comment.
Hey everyone, it's Ben. The warning label on today's edition of the podcast reads, adult language and adult themes. So if you need to save this one for me time, press pause, and I'll see you back here when you get to your personal space. To those of you sticking around, let's get started. Chris is today's guest. He's 36, and he lives in the Midwest. He's studying for his master's in cybersecurity, gets on well with his family, and has been in a relationship with a woman for a year. It all sounds pretty good, right? Well, getting there has been a long, dark road involving drugs, alcohol, sex, and, well, I'll let Chris tell the story. That extra element could surprise you. Strap in, we'll get started right now. This is The Secret Room, a podcast about the stories no one ever tells. I'm Ben Hamm.
Holding on for my life, hanging on by a thread, because if I don't try, I'm going to fall into the hatred of this world. My hands are bleeding. This thread cuts through my veins, but it's all I have to hold. I hang and pray.
You got involved with drugs early.
I was like really involved with the youth group at church, and one of my friends at the youth group one day came to me and told me that he had tried marijuana. I was really scared of drugs, but the fact that I couldn't even tell that he was on drugs made me more susceptible of wanting to try them myself. When I was 17 years old, I ended up running away from home. I was using ecstasy and LSD kind of heavily. That was the beginning of my senior year. I had dropped out of high school. My parents let me come back home and graduate high school.
Thinking back, can you tell me what life was like at home?
My dad was kind of abusive when we were growing up. I kind of lived in fear of him and stuff like that. And I was just kind of like a ticking time bomb waiting for some sort of release, and I think I found it in drugs. I guess one of the trickiest parts about drugs or alcohol is if you have been off of them for a while, you kind of forget, you know, the misery that it brings into your life. It's just really easy to focus on, you know, wanting that good feeling again, because drugs do make you feel good. There's no doubt about that. I remember watching the news one night and seeing a segment that they did on these drugs, bath salts. They said that this drug mimicked cocaine and methamphetamine and that it was legal. The ones that I bought the first time, they were called 8-Balls and Ivory Wave. They're an actual drug, it's just a chemical, and they were put in a package labeled bath salts with a little label that says not for human consumption, with the idea that, you know, this is something you put in the bathtub or whatnot. but in reality, it's something that you smoke or snort. One of the greatest things about bath salts was that I could walk into a smoke shop, buy drugs, and legally walk down the street without the police doing anything to me.
When we were talking about doing this interview, you sent me some news reports to watch on bath salts. And I gotta say, that is some pretty heavy stuff.
Right. One of the big crazes back then was, you know, this man who had eaten somebody's face off while he was on bath salts. Just people acting crazy on this stuff, you know.
Tell me about the first time.
The first time I was alone, I had just gotten a new apartment. When I got home, I just remember, you know, breaking out a little line of these 8-balls bath salts on my kitchen table and snorting a line. I ended up watching pornography that night for probably about 8 or 9 hours straight. The fact that I knew that I could go just like get it and walk out of this store holding it in my hand legally, I just ended up going back and back to get more and more. It's not legal anymore.
And what was it like coming down?
Just a very, very strong feeling of depression and anxiety. Almost gives you a suicidal feeling that you would rather not be alive than feel the way that you feel.
What's it like being on bath salts?
Inside my own apartment, it kind of became like my own personal hell. I would normally, after I did it, take my clothes off, thinking that people were outside of my apartment wanting to get me. There's many nights that I spent crawling across my floor trying to hide from the shadows, thinking that people were looking in my windows.
Wow, so you had paranoia.
Right.
And depression.
Right.
So what crazy things did bath salts make you do?
Somehow it'd come up in my mind that there were people like sitting at different points around my apartment. I called the police saying that there was someone outside my apartment trying to kill me. When the police did come up, the first thing I know that came out of my mouth was that I'm going to go to rehab soon. Their only reaction was good and they left. For some reason, when I was on, you know, bath salts, I just wanted to wear like women's lingerie. So I ended up going to Target or Walmart, buying women's lingerie, wearing it. You know, I did question, was I suppressing something and it was coming out when I was using the bath salts? Just going into a store like Target or Walmart was kind of a sexual experience in itself. It did turn me on to a certain degree, but at the same time, it brought on a lot of strong paranoia.
Did anyone ever catch you in women's clothes?
I was full-blown out cross-dressing and I heard a knock on my door. I told the guy, you know, to go away. The next thing I know, I saw my door handle turn. I didn't realize it, but my front door was actually unlocked and my neighbor opened the door and came into my apartment. You know, my eyes were about as black as, you know, black crystal balls, and here I am cross-dressing. My neighbor walked in the room. I just remember him slowly opening the door, looking in, and his eyes were just wide open. His mouth dropped. I looked at him and I was nearly shaking, but I just said, "Get the fuck out of here." And he looked at me and just shook his head and said, "Okay," very slowly. He closed the door. That was the last night that I had, or the last day that I had spent in the apartment. At that point in time, I got dressed in my regular clothes. I packed up a bag. I headed out the door. And I ended up going to the head shop and I never returned to that apartment again.
So the bath salts give you paranoia. They give you depression.
Right.
And they gave you the desire to cross-dress.
Right.
What else?
Ended up giving me these strong sexual desires to have sex with people. And I ended up finding myself on Craigslist, you know, searching for casual encounters with other men. Sometimes it would be like 2 or 3 people a day. There were a lot of men that came over and did these things with me and it felt really good at the time, but it's nothing I've never done when I wasn't on drugs. You know, I identify as heterosexual myself, but that's kind of what that led to anyways. Got to where my paranoia was so strong, like I didn't feel safe in my house. I spent a lot of money staying in hotel rooms. There was actually a time when I had wandered out of the hotel room and ended up having a sexual encounter with the person who was actually running the hotel that evening at the front desk. There was another time when I was at a hotel and we started messing around sexually. I told him I had bath salts. He wanted to try them, so he did, and he stayed there for about 5 hours. Well, it turned out his family was at the hotel as well. His wife was there, as well as his wife's parents, and he had been gone from their room all night, and in the morning, his paranoia kicked in. He wanted me to go downstairs with him to confront his family and come up with some sort of an excuse while he was gone all night. I ended up going down there with him, not wanting to, but I did anyways. I told his in-laws that he had called the Alcoholics Anonymous hotline asking for help, and I was the person they sent out to help him. One thing about speed or bath salts is really hard to get an erection on any of these things. So I'm having this encounter with this guy who's cross-dressing for me, and suddenly, well, I can't get an erection, and he thinks that I don't like him. So he ends up in the bathroom, and I see him texting. I thought that he was texting somebody to come to the room to rob me or cause some harm to me. I ended up calling one of my friends, and I told him that, hey, I think this guy in this hotel room is trying to rob me. Can you please come pick me up? And I basically just kind of ran out the room and left this guy stranded there while my friend came and picked me up. Now, whether or not he was really trying to do something to me, I don't know. I remember when we got in his car, I just kind of begged him, like, please don't take me home. Like, please let me just go to your house and, like, kind of watch over me for the rest of the night.
And so he did.
Right, he did.
He's a good friend.
Right. Close to the end of it, I always had a knife on me. I was doing bath salts so much that I did get to the point where I thought I was constantly in danger. I remember one night sitting on my toilet holding a knife, like yelling towards my living room, like, I know you're in there, and if you come here, I'm gonna kill you.
Wow.
Right.
And there was nobody there.
Right.
And how did you support your addiction?
I was taking out a lot of these payday loans, you know, for like $500 or $600 and spending them all on the bath salts. I was collecting checks for the Montgomery GI Bill, but I had quit school, so I was just getting these monthly checks. Eventually it was going to come to the end, and I kind of knew that it would. I had sold all of my furniture in my apartment, my TV. It got to the point where I was just sleeping on this blanket on my floor.
So what brought it to an end for you?
When I was doing casual encounters, I met like two men online. I don't want to get like all this paranoia built up. I don't want to meet all these strangers. How about I just try to meet like one or two people and try to do this with them over and over again? That's what I did. I kind of like got in these two relationships with these two different men. I kept using the bath salts. I kept meeting these two men. I kept having these sexual encounters with them. And eventually, I just felt like crap, and I just wanted to be done with it at that point in time. It was in October of 2011. Like, there was one day that bath salts are going to be scheduled a narcotic. I bought about $600 worth of bath salts on that day. I went to a hotel. I did about $600 worth of bath salts over a two-day period. I called my friend, and so he came and picked me up and took me to the hospital. When I had started bath salts, I weighed probably about 170 pounds. They weighed me, and at that point in my time, I weighed 129 pounds. I kind of told him about all these things that were going on with the bath salts, the paranoia, the sexual encounters, the cross-dressing, and I just kind of begged them to not let me leave that hospital. They ended up checking me into a psychiatric unit, and I ended up staying in the psychiatric unit for about 6 days. I was really unhealthy when I got there. I had a urinary tract infection as well. But I went to the psychiatric unit. They gave me benzodiazepines. And I slept for about 6 days straight until they woke me up. And then they sent me to rehab in a different city.
How long has it been now since you've used bath salts?
Well, it's 2017, 17 now. I haven't used bath salts since late 2011.
And what's your view of your own sexuality right now?
Right, so after my bath salt experience, I questioned my sexuality a lot. I wondered if I was gay. I wondered if I was bisexual. I wondered, you know, why was I cross-dressing? And I ended up going through therapy with several different therapists. There's a lot of counselors out there who have tried to tell me that, well, you're suppressing your sexuality and you use the drugs to make it all come out. I attended like some LGBTQ support groups for a while. I mean, I'm definitely not homophobic. I have a lot of gay friends and I'm all about that community and everything, you know. But in terms of my own sexuality, I have just, no matter how hard I tried to say I'm bisexual or that I have this cross-dressing fetish or something like that, like a lot of counselors told me, in my heart, like, I just feel 100% heterosexual. The LGBTQ and the sexuality counseling, I mean, that went on up until about a year ago. It took me a while to just kind of work through what happened in my life with the bath salts. But, you know, at this point in my life, I had to return back to school and work on getting my master's degree and things like that. So, and I've had a girlfriend for the past year now, so.
How much does your girlfriend know about all this?
My girlfriend doesn't necessarily know about the bath salts or the cross-dressing, but she knows about the my history of having sex with other men.
Why is that?
Prior to meeting this particular girlfriend, I was dating someone. She was really homophobic, always making homophobic remarks and things like that, and it just really offended me, you know? It made me, like, really angry, yet I tried to put on this facade that, like, you know, whenever she made a homosexual remark, I would just kind of be like, oh, haha, that's funny, or blah, blah, blah. Eventually, I ended up telling that girl about my sexual experience and saying, hey, you know what? Guess what? You know, I've had sex with men. I didn't ever tell her about the drugs, but that girl was really disgusted of it. And she quit talking to me after us dating for like 6 months. I'm not going to try to pretend to be something like I'm not or try to deny my past. So when I started dating my current girlfriend, like, I just told her, like, hey, look, I've had sex with men before. I've been afraid to tell her about the cross-dressing and just the bath salt experience itself. The fact that she accepts the one thing, she probably would accept the other. I don't know how much I need to tell her, you know?
Well, it's your story. I don't think you're obligated to tell her. How many people do know the full story?
The only person who knows my full story, his name is Tim. And he knows about the bath salts and the cross-dressing. Like I said, he had picked me up the one night from the hotel. Several of my male friends know about my male sexual encounters, but a lot of them don't know about the cross-dressing.
You said you aren't going to pretend to be something that you aren't, but you do keep this story a secret from most people, certainly the full story, which I completely get. But in your own words, then, why do you keep it a secret?
That's a good question. You know, there's a sense of paranoia that still lingers with me. Maybe that same type of paranoia that I felt while I was on the bath salts. I fear that if certain people know, like, it could turn to something violent or just, like, I guess maybe there's still a part of me that feels shame about it, you know?
I texted Chris later and asked him why he fears violence, what he meant by that. This is what he said. My first memory of a gay person was a guy at school getting tormented, cussed at, spit on, things thrown at him, called faggot and queer. Just terrible, terrible stuff. Like I said, I do consider myself straight, but the memory has always stuck with me. I felt so bad for that person. I knew it was wrong, and when I experimented, I feared being treated like that person if anybody found out. No matter how much I talk about it or try to face it, I still have the same fears. And why did you decide to share the story in the secret room?
I came on the show to share this story because there was a lot of hype in the media about bath salts, such as people eating people's faces off. They are very dangerous, but there's also a way to get off of them.
Are there any resources you'd like to share for people who are facing addiction problems?
If I could attribute my, you know, recovery to two things, it would be smart recovery and cognitive behavioral therapy.
Now, you've been clean, as you said, for about 6 years, and that's great. Nobody can take that from you.
Do you fear the yearning will return?
I feel pretty strong at this point, but every now and then I do find myself on the internet Googling bath salts. Are bath salts legal? Some things like that. There's a band called Inside Out with an album titled No Spiritual Surrender. It never really made much sense to me until I had actually gotten through this experience with bath salts. I have the lyrics to that song memorized, and they say, holding on for my life, hanging on by a thread, because if I don't try, I'm going to fall into the hatred of this world. My hands are bleeding, this thread cuts through my veins, but it's all I have to hold. I hang and pray, I struggle every day to keep this spark of reality from growing cold. A tightrope balance, my very life, hangs by a thread above the abyss of my despair. If I lose my grip again, if I snap, I will be lost again.
Maybe the struggle will never really be over for Chris, but he's got it licked as much as he ever has. Thanks, Chris. Thanks a lot for sharing your story.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Chris called me a few days after our interview. He said his story would not be complete without this ending, without this silver lining. A close friendship forged out of misery and sorrow.
I'm a big fan of true crime shows, and one day I came across a show of a girl who committed second-degree murder. The way that she described her emotional state before and after her crime just really hit home in terms of how I felt about my bath salt experience. Well, I had a strong desire to, you know, write her a letter. Well, she wrote me back. As time went by, I slowly started opening up to her about the bath salt experience and the sexual experiences. She was just like really receptive of it and accepting, and led to me deciding to share to my doctors what had actually happened. It also allowed me to become comfortable enough to do this show for The Secret Room, as well as open up to my current girlfriend about those things. I ended up meeting her in real life about 6 times. It was very nerve-wracking the first time. She became very encouraging in terms of encouraging me to go back to school and continue my education. After I had been in school for about 1.5 years, she started college inside of prison. And we've just kind of been walking, you know, that path together, like metaphorically speaking, and it's turned into a beautiful thing, which has turned into other beautiful relationships that I have with people simply by being a little bit more honest with them.
Chris told me that even his family doesn't know his full secret, that he's done bath salts, that he's cross-dressed, and that he's had sex with men. Of course, they've seen him go in and out of rehab, but he told them that it's been due to alcoholism. It's put a big strain on his relationship with his family, but that's on the mend now, too. And that includes his relationship with his father, who you'll remember Chris said was abusive to him when he was a kid. He says they're on good terms today. If you'd like to see the house where Chris did bath salts, check the picture he sent me posted to our Facebook page. I've put a red arrow on the picture that points to his window. There's also a picture of the types of bath salts he used to buy. See them all at facebook.com/secretroompod. Chris attributed his ability to kick the habit to smart recovery. I'm linking smartrecovery.org on our Facebook page and in the show notes in your podcast player.
Next time on The Secret Room.
I said, why did you do this? And this is when I knew he knew what his mother had done. He said, because all women are whores. And he said, you're one too. I said, you know I'm going to have to report this to the police. I said, you know that you're in serious trouble. I said, and you need to leave this house immediately.
Learn what Carol's husband did and if he left. When Carol brings her story that spanned decades right here to The Secret Room. It's your favorite little podcast that could. Chris shared a personal story today, and you can too. Just head over to secretroompodcast.com and click the Share Your Secret button. One option you'll get is to leave us a voicemail at 929-265-TSRP. Give it a whirl. Tell everyone how to let us know they liked your story, Chris.
You can leave The Secret Room a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app.
And as per usual, our theme and music were composed by Breakmaster Cylinder. Additional music was composed and performed by yours truly at the Public Instrument Installation at the corner of West 12th and Green in downtown Silverton, Colorado. The elevation's 9,300 feet, and the air is crisp and clean. I recommend a trip there by train. Oh, and that's why the show's a few days late this time. Sorry. But you know, I was hiking in Colorado. It's really nice there. And Chris's theme, By a Thread,
is by Inside Out. Chris recited some of the lyrics, but there was no actual clip of the song. That heavy guitar under Chris, that was Breakmaster Cylinder. And Jane X helped with production. Any parting words, Chris?
Well, I guess just one thing I would like to say to the audience out there, if you are struggling with research chemicals or bath salts or just any kind of narcotic, you know, there is help out there, and I hope that my story will give you a sense of hope, you know, that there's light at the end of the tunnel.
And that wraps up episode 39. Thanks a lot for downloading. I'm Ben Hamm, and this is The Secret Room. Pod on.
Pod on. I guess another thing I had left out was the last day, like, before I actually went to the hospital that night, like, the night before they had put me in the psychiatric unit, I was walking around town with an extension cord holding my pants up. And I just kind of remember looking back on that point in my life and kind of just feeling like this is a low point here.